uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And beautiful Thursday to you, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. What a novel idea. Truth? Common sense? We can't have that, can we? Liberal? Okay, sure. Progressive? Yes! Welcome to the program. Boy, oh boy, I'll tell you, the Media Matters for America, David Brock's group, has really nailed this. This is absolutely remarkable. The network news last night, at least one of the networks, tagged their news with the story of going up to the average person on the street and showing them a picture of George W. Bush holding hands with Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia and saying, what do you think about this? You'll recall on the Jay Leno show day before yesterday, Jay had Laura Bush on and said, what do you think of this? And Laura said, well, you know, I thought it was kind of sweet. And Jay said, oh, you're a very understanding wife. Yeah. Not that I want to plug Jay. He's increasingly turning into a right-wing crank himself, but and was pretty openly supportive of the Republicans during the last election. But here we have a prince from the most repressive, or certainly probably one of the five most repressive nations on earth. Religiously, certainly the most repressive. I'd say Burma and North Korea, they're way up there in terms of repressive, but they don't do it in the name of religion. In Saudi Arabia, it's done in the name of religion, one of the most oppressive theocracies on the planet. The country that is exporting radical Islam all over the planet today as aggressively as it can, using your gas dollars and mine, although I got a Prius, so it's fewer and fewer of those gas dollars. George W. now, by the way, says he's going to offer, first it was $2,000, now it's a $4,000 tax cut to people who buy cars, hybrid cars. It's a good step. It's sort of similar to something that Jimmy Carter proposed, though. I mean, it's like, come on, George. You think this is putting lipstick on the pig. This is, here you've got this huge energy bill. Well, let's just offer a tax cut to people who buy a Prius or one of the new GM. Maybe there's only one. They have a new SUV coming out that's hybrid? No doubt it'll be a tank of some sort. And to buy a Prius right now, or a Honda Insight, you got to get on a waiting list. People can sell their used Priuses for more than brand new ones sell for because you can't get them. And now he's going to put a tax credit on it? It's going to make them even harder to get. And who's going to make all the money on this? The Japanese corporations. Well, but they make them in America. Well, actually, they don't make the Prius in America. They probably will soon, though, because demand is exploding. Anyhow, as I was saying, here you have this country, Saudi Arabia, that is making all this money off our addiction to oil, and they're using this money to export Wahhabism, radical Islam, all over the planet, to the point that they so indoctrinated poor little Osama, not that I have great sympathy for him, but you get the point. They so indoctrinated this schmuck that he thought that his duty was to protect Islam from Christianity, from the corruption, the moral corruption of America, to protect Saudi Arabia from the moral corruption of America, get U.S. GIs off Saudi air bases, get them off the Prince Bandar or whatever it is, Air Force Base, where George Herbert Walker Bush put them for the first Gulf War. This has been a bone in the craw of the Saudis ever since, particularly the fundamentalists. How dare they have soldiers there drinking alcohol? Women soldiers who drive, and they're not wearing scarves. We can't have that. And so back in 98, Osama said, if you don't get these folks out of Saudi Arabia, I'm going to come and take you out. And sure enough, he did. So what did George W. Bush do? Did he track down Osama bin Laden and punish him for his crime? No. He took our troops out of Saudi Arabia. That's a man's man. How can the Republicans look at this guy and think macho? I don't get it. I don't get it. Yeah, he walks like there's something wrong there, but he kind of something between a strut and a waddle, I suppose. But we don't need to get into personal attacks or commenting on the president's sexuality or lack thereof, but to make the point, but it's remarkable. So anyhow, here he is holding hands with Prince Abdullah at the same time that 15 out of the 19 hijackers to the United States, in the United States, you know, who attacked us on 9/11, 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis. He's holding the hand of the head guy of the government of the country that provided 15 of the 19 hijackers. What's with that? Could it have something to do with the $1 billion-plus dollars that over the last 30 years has been funneled from Saudi Arabia and the bin Laden family into the coffers of the Bush family and their friends and affiliated companies? I mean, there's certainly a lot of oil around the world, if that's all you want. You don't have to exclusively go to Saudi Arabia. But here's the story that's not being reported. And this is where we get back to where I started, Media Matters for America, nailing this thing. This is the story that has not been reported. In fact, AFP reported it in the United States. Amy Goodman talked about it on Democracy Now. That's about it. And the story is that one of the guys traveling with Saudi Crown Prince Abdullah, the guy who was holding hands with George W. Bush day before yesterday, one of the men traveling with him from Saudi Arabia was on the U.S. State Department's list of known terrorists. Terrorists! And what did they do? Did they go back to Saudi Arabia and say, arrest this guy? Did they stop him when the plane arrived at the airport and say, we're throwing you in jail? No. No, he was traveling with Prince Abdullah. They said, sorry, you can't come into the country. You have to go back to Saudi Arabia. Go back there and be a nice terrorist.
This is the administration that's tough on terror. They're so tough on terror, they have two 16-year-old girls in prison in New York because one of them dared write in her diary that she thought that suicide bombing was not a way to get to heaven. Now, figure that out.
But she's Muslim. And she wears a headscarf, even though she's 16 years old. And so she and her best friend, with no evidence of any crime whatsoever, no charges of any crime whatsoever, under the Patriot Act, are being held in prison, or in jail, in New York, or New Jersey, in that area. But not the guy traveling with Crown Prince Abdullah. No. No, he was just sent back because he's on the watch list, the official U.S. government watch list. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security, in a routine check of the delegation's passenger manifest, found that one traveler was on a government list meant to screen out possible terrorists. So they denied him a visa. Oh, apparently, if you don't have a visa, he probably didn't get on the plane in the first place, although I'm not sure whether he was turned back. We don't know. I mean, what happened to the press in America? How can they report on things? Well, they can't report on things. It's just like Don Rumsfeld right now with the trial of this guy. Where did that story go? Here it is. Don Rumsfeld has launched the latest attack in the administration's war on a free and independent media. This in the case of Hassan Akbar, the Army sergeant who's being tried at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. The Pentagon is requiring civilian reporters, to sign a form, a waiver, a contract that gives up their First Amendment rights. They're not allowed to talk to anybody on the base. They're not allowed to talk to any of the other reporters. They're not allowed to talk to the service members on the base. They're not allowed to talk to the lawyers on either side. How are they supposed to do their job? But many people will think, it's a military base. Isn't that covered by the Uniform Code of Military Justice? After all, you can't just walk onto a military base. Yeah, I'll give you that. However, court procedures, court-martial procedures, military procedures, even under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the UCMJ, court procedures on military bases are supposed to be open. That's what the law requires. There is a provision, just as there is with civilian law, that allows the local authorities to say, that allows the judge, in the case, to say, we're going to close the proceedings. We need to protect sensitive information. We need to protect a particular witness. We need to protect a defendant. We're going to close the proceedings. There are times when that's appropriate, both in the civilian world and in the military world. But is that what's going on? No. There has been no hearing. There has been no finding. There has been no evidence put forward suggesting that there is any reason at all why these hearings should be private. And now reporters are being followed to the bathroom and monitored in the bathrooms to make sure they don't talk to anybody. Eugene Fidel, a military law expert, said he has never heard of restrictions against talking to soldiers. He called such limitations, and I quote, the word of a military law expert, such limitations are, quote, crazy. Crazy. In fact, the reporters and editors who are members of the military are saying something similar. Military Reporters and Editors, MRE, this is an official organization of military journalists. They've written a letter to Secretary Rumsfeld demanding that the Department of the Army rescind these constraints and assure that similar restrictions will not be imposed elsewhere. This isn't the first time Rumsfeld has cracked down on journalists trying to cover a military trial. Trista Talton, a military affairs reporter, says she ran into similar restrictions when she covered the court-martial of a Marine accused of accidentally killing several people when his plane clipped the wires of a cable car in Italy. According to Talton, the latest restrictions are part of a pattern designed to keep the media under control. This from the same Don Rumsfeld, who back in 1966, when he was a Republican in Congress and the president was a Democrat, LBJ, said citizens and the press will continue to question, to investigate, to doubt, and to seek the truth. He said we should not trust the actions and statements of the executive branch of the federal government. Such advice, if heeded, would be heeded by the naive and the non-discriminating. Yeah. 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We're going to Graceland. Or maybe not.
Mississippi Delta was shining like a national guitar.
What a great voice.
I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War.
Yes, indeed. There you go. You know, it's one place I've never been, and I frankly never had a desire to go to. Louise, have you ever wanted to go to Graceland? You haven't. I didn't think so. One of these days I'm going to open the mic on you and say, hello. And Heidi is smiling, too. Welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina. Streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. It's beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Listener-supported station. Radio WhiteRoseSociety.org. And Live 365's American FM.
So welcome back to our program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I think I said that, but maybe not. Here's Jeff in Atlanta, I believe. Nothing's showing up on my screen, Louise, except the phone number, but I'm hoping that's you, Jeff. You there?
Yeah, thanks, Atlanta. I'm in a little bit of overload with despair after yesterday because I watched Control Room and The Corporation, and then I topped it off by watching the synopsis of Bush's energy speech about getting rid of fossil fuels and then simultaneously investing $2 billion in coal and nuclear, you know?
Wow, that's like somebody who occasionally is a teetotaler going out and chugging a pint of whiskey or
exactly.
Doing heroin or something. I mean, that's serious.
Yeah, I assume we've already seen both those movies.
I have, yeah, and they're marvelous. Yeah. In fact, Control Room, Louise and I walked out of that movie in shock, you know, because Tariq, Louise just said in my ear, she said, we couldn't have taken them both. I agree. She said, Tariq, I'm forgetting his last name, dies in the movie. And
right.
He's this really nice guy that you get to know, and you get to know him, and you get to know his family. And Rumsfeld is warning him, stop reporting on the war. Stop reporting on what's going on in Iraq. It's making us look bad. Rumsfeld is not telling him to not lie. Or accusing him of lying. Rumsfeld is essentially just saying, stop reporting on this. And Tariq goes up on the roof of a building. They phone in the coordinates of where they are to the military, because the military has said, if you don't do that, we will hit you, because when we notice radio signals coming up, we're assuming that somebody's calling in artillery or something, and if it's not our guys, we don't know about it, we will send a missile at it. So they call in and they say, okay, Tariq is going to be right here, right then. And sure enough, Tariq shows up there with his camera crew, and they're filming him, and a laser-guided missile, or whatever it is, and a super, you know, super accurate missile comes down and blows him up. And then Rumsfeld goes on TV and brags about it, like he's a mafia don who just did a hit.
Yeah, if we weren't living in an Orwellian world, that we'd be saying, this is horrific and shocking, but at least justice would be served. Like, no, it's not exactly the opposite. You know, question for Bush, if I was a member of the White House press corps, would just be to simply say, have you ever read 1984? You know?
But, 1984, yeah. Yeah.
It's, my question.
That movie is something that every American should see. American should see Control Room. That is such an important movie.
Yeah, I was thinking, if only everyone saw this as much as everyone saw Fahrenheit 9/11, you know?
Yeah, Control Room, I felt, was much stronger.
Exactly. But my, as I said to Louise, specifically, is I've been trying to suggest this to someone like you or Al Franken for a while. The Democrats, my dream ticket was Clark Kucinich, and one of the reasons I liked them both was they both said that they would do weekly town hall meetings.
Right.
And I'm thinking, you know, you don't have to actually be the president for you guys to do that. And obviously, especially in considering how Bush does fake town hall meetings, wouldn't it be such a great contrast if they were to do that and show the world this is how it's supposed to be done?
Yeah, they absolutely should. That's a great suggestion, Jeff, and I agree with you.
How can we get it to maybe tell Bernie? Tell who are we going to...
I would start out by letting Kucinich know and letting Clark know and anybody else who you think might do it. I mean, these guys are not unavailable. You can send them email, certainly to their staffs, and very often it actually does get to them. Contact them, send them an email suggesting that, and also contact your elected officials and say, from Georgia there, and say, how about doing some town hall meetings? How about setting a good example? How about coming down here and having a little democracy? We the people would like to talk to you, that sort of thing. I would think that would be a great beginning.
Hopefully,
Jeff.
This radio show will be heard by whoever on, you know, Dean or someone, and they'll take the ball from there. But yeah, hopefully other listeners will do something with that too.
There you go. And cool. Dean actually is running around setting these kinds of things up. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
If I had a hammer.
Oh, yes, I'd had a hammer in the morning. No, I'm not going to sing along. I've been chastised. I sang on the air once. I learned my lesson. You did? You did what? Okay. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. Rich in Chicago is with us. Hey, Rich, thanks for calling the Tom Hartman Show.
Hey, Tom, how you doing this morning?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Fantastic. I love the show. Hey, you know, I feel a little guilty. I got a phone call this morning I wasn't expecting in my place of business. And this guy starts talking to me. He says he's, you know, sorry to disturb me, but asked me if I wanted to go to a dinner to support President Bush because he's coming to Chicago. And I wasn't.
I hope you said yes.
Well, I went nuts, and I feel guilty about it. And I said, are you kidding me? That guy's a fascist. I would never support him. I just kind of really, you know, and then I felt really guilty because who knows who he was.
Get control of yourself, Rich.
Exactly. So, but I wish I could apologize to the guy. But I still,
well, you know, you may have an opportunity to when the Secret Service comes and hauls you away and you meet him face to face in an interrogation room.
That other people in the office heard that and they thought, well, okay, well, there's a knock on the door coming soon. But this isn't why I called you. You know, I'm curious. I don't know the law, you know, well enough. But why couldn't a group of people, you know, sign a petition or whatever like that, and then in civil or in a class action suit, claim that the government acts more as a fascist government than a democracy, and just kind of lay everything out into the table, and Democrats and Republicans alike, and just say, hey, you don't act in the best interest of the people here. You are more in the corporate side, and this is not what America is all about. And even just kind of bring it into the sunlight. You know,
well,
I'd like to listen to your answer.
Yeah, we don't need to have, you know, a lawsuit or anything like that to do that. We just need politicians who are willing to speak the truth.
Yeah, but the politicians, they seem, once they end up on Capitol Hill, they become corrupted by that system. I mean, with lobbyists and the amount of money that's there, I mean, it's definitely not in the interest of the people.
But there are still some who are defending We the People.
Okay.
In my mind.
Yeah, I mean Bernie, when you talk to him, I mean, he's...
Yeah, Bernie, Dennis Kucinich. I even think that folks on the right, there are some folks on the right who still have some integrity. Ron Paul down in Texas, for example. He is so far right that his own party considers him an extremist.
Yeah.
And I think that in many regards, I don't know all his position on all the issues, but I think in many regards, he's a guy of integrity. He's a man of integrity. He may be wrong, but he truly believes in what he's saying, and very often it works against him economically or in terms of support from particular interest groups.
And Dick Durbin says some good things every once in a while here in Illinois. But Hastert's now reversing himself on this delay and this ethics thing, and I'm wondering if there isn't a little bit of change coming within, because I think they see a backlash here.
It's more than a little bit, Rich. It's more than a little bit. And
gives me a little bit of hope.
Exactly. Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. It is in part because of things like Progressive Talk Radio. Don't underestimate that. Don't underestimate the power that Rush Limbaugh had 15 years, him and all his clones and wannabes out there on the right, changing the dialogue in America. And Progressive Talk Radio bringing up these issues and speaking the truth to America and speaking the truth to power. And there are also politicians who are speaking these things. But I'll tell you, the phrase robber baron is not a phrase that we invented in this century. It's not a phrase that was invented in the last 50 years. It wasn't a phrase that was invented in the last 100 years. In fact, it wasn't invented in the last two centuries. It was back in the late 1900s that politicians, progressive and populist politicians, started referring to the owners of the big corporations, the power brokers, the Vanderbilts, the Morgans, the Rockefellers, started referring to them as robber barons, the Mellons, referring to them as robber barons, and referring to the politicians who were beholden to them as in the pocket of the robber barons. I don't think that there was anybody in America by 1910, 1920, certainly by 1930, who didn't fully get it, totally understand in every way possible that the GOP meant in the pockets of the robber barons. Everybody understood it. And what they have been so successful in doing, the Republican Party has been so successful in doing, and some conservatives in the Democratic Party as well, have been so successful at doing, is wrapping themselves in things like the American flag and God and fear of terrorism and fear of gays and concern about gun rights. They've wrapped themselves in these issues so effectively, so fully, that they've prevented people from having discussions about who's really paying the bills. Who really owns these politicians? Who's really controlling them? What's really going on with them? This is really, we are moving very rapidly into a Stalinist state. Well, moving rapidly. We're there right now. We have single-party rule in the United States. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. And you've got politicians saying things like quoting Stalin, death solves all problems, no man, no problem, talking about the Supreme Court. And the Secret Service is going to investigate Randy Rhodes. Because on her show, there was a skit that involved bang-bang noises and the president's name. And yet you have Republican politicians encouraging violence against federal judges. Nobody's calling them to account. Nobody's asking them, what's up with this? They're not apologizing like Randy did. This is just nuts. It's nuts. And how do you fix it? You fix it at the ballot box. You fix it but you in 2006 and in 2008. But you can't do that if you don't start today. Today. You have to say, today I am beginning to get politically active. Go to the websites, the politically active websites. Visit commondreams.org. Visit buzzflash.com. Visit opednews.com. Visit truthout.org. Join the organizations. Visit democracyforamerica.org. Sign up. Show up for a meetup in your community. Join the local Democratic Party. Or if you're inclined, join the local Republican Party. Join the local Green Party. You can join two at once. It's not a totally exclusive club. Show up for the meetings, participate, speak your mind, and say, we're here. We're not going to go away. We're not going to be silenced. This is how we take back America. Phil in Louisiana on the line. Hey, Phil, thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I've been keeping up to date with you over the last few weeks, and I'm really glad you're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It occurred to me last week that if you're an insurance lobbyist, or if you're a company or an insurance or the drug industry or a petrochemical industry, you want to get the most efficient use of your dollars. And one way to do that is to only have to contribute to one party.
Right.
So consequently, if you don't have to give to the Democrats or the Greens, you can give to one party, you get more efficient use of.
And this is what happened. This is what's happening. You see organizations like, I believe, Home Depot, Amazon.com, some organizations that you wouldn't expect that are donating all or most of their money to the Republican Party. I mean, the ones you would expect, of course, you know, the big oil companies, the big financial industry companies,
exactly.
the big polluting companies, the Monsantos of the world and whatnot. These organizations are just throwing money at the Republicans, but they've been doing that forever. Up until maybe 8 or 9 years ago, they used to split it 50-50 just for appearances, if nothing else. But now they're openly partisan.
And hedging their bets as well.
Yeah.
The thing that scared the right wing this past election was the amount of money raised by grassroots organizations under the 527s. And that Kerry got so much money from people who went on the Internet and said, you know what, I can give $20, I can give $50.
Yeah, and they're trying to change that. You know, there was
they're the willies out of them.
I know, and they're trying to roll back McCain-Feingold, and they did it yesterday with a procedural deal. Harry Reid is all incensed about this. I'm not sure I have the article in this particular stack, but we will get to it today. Harry Reid is all concerned about the fact that the Republicans, they didn't have enough votes to even get this thing out of committee. So with a procedural move, a little bit of sleight of hand, legislative sleight of hand, they're moving along a piece of legislation that's going to begin dismantling McCain-Feingold. What little protection that is, they want to dismantle that so that the Republicans can take even more money from corporations and their lobbyists.
Well, they were amazed at how much money was raised. I mean, I think the Democrats matched or even exceeded the money raised by the corporation.
Yeah,
in
certain ways and in certain levels. Phil, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. I appreciate it. And you're spot on, right? And the thing to do about it is to speak up and get active. Justin in Brattleboro, Vermont on the line. Hey, Justin, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, man? I was just listening to your show on my lunch break from my work, and I'm agreeing with everything you're saying, man. I just wanted to put a word in, like, to you. Like, be careful, man, if they ever come after you, you know what I mean? Like, like they could come after you like they're coming after that Randy Rhodes lady.
Yeah.
And I think that you speak like so much truth. It's important to have people like you like on the radio. Like if I listen to the normal radio, like not Sirius satellite, like normal radio airwaves,
mm-hmm.
I don't hear anything like except for NPR, and that's like little bits and pieces of like.
And they're being taken over by the Republicans.
Yeah, no, and even NPR is on its way out. It's on its way out the door. Like
yeah.
even that's like on its way down, but. I just think it's so great what you're doing, man. I just want to, like, say that we have your back. Like, the whole state of Vermont has your back. Like, everybody up here has your back for sure, man. There's definitely plenty of us who know what's up. You know
great.
What I mean?
Great.
Yep.
Good on you. Good on you, Justin. Pass
yep.
the word along. Spread
yeah,
the word.
Definitely.
And
yeah.
you know, tag your it. You carry
yeah.
on carry
yeah.
on the message, because that's how it has to work. It can't just be a few radio talk show hosts. It has to be our authors or whatever. It has to be all of us. We all have to get involved. So good of you to call in, Justin. Thanks for your kind words, and keep up the good work.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Thanks. And I will watch my backside, as they say. Susan in California on the line. Hey, Susan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. So glad you're still with us.
Me too.
What I wanted to say is, you know, I've got some emails this morning about calling the senators and reps about the Alaska drilling going through in the budget.
Mm-hmm. Among other things, there's also the Real ID piece of legislation going through in the budget.
Yeah, so
they're burying all kinds of stuff in that thing.
Yeah, it's a big day today because I can't even reach the Congress building. You know, it's continually busy. But what
have
I
you tried 1-877-SOB-USOB?
That'll be my next one.
Yeah, because if you go through the Capitol switchboard, sometimes it's easier to get in.
Okay. What I wanted to suggest to people is that they call Dennis Hastert's office, which I'm going to do today, and congratulate him for making his move to restore the ethics rules. And
that's a good idea.
Yeah,
catch him doing something right. You can
right.
reach him at 1-877-SOB-USOB as well.
Okay. And at the same time, I'm going to suggest that he vote to keep the drilling out of Alaska as well. So,
right. Good one.
But I kill two birds with one stone, and thank you, Tom. Love you.
You're welcome. Thank
okay.
you, Susan. Thanks
Bye.
For your kind words. Appreciate the call. 1-877-8, excuse me, I'm mixing up my Congress number and my 1-877-SOB-USOB is the number of Congress. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. James in Atlanta is on the line. Hey, James, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for accepting my call.
Sure.
I just had a question about, say, I moved here from Virginia. I live in Cobb County, and, you know, once I got down here, I realized that I moved into the actual backyard of the people that voted for Newt Gingrich.
Well, to some extent, I lived in Cobb County for about 14 years, so... And Newt was my congressman, but I never voted for him. And there's a lot of good Democrats and a lot of good independents in Cobb County, Georgia. Although, as
right.
you're absolutely right, it is a county that generally votes Republican.
Right. And I was wondering what I can do down here to, like, say, because, I mean, one of the biggest issues is, you know, getting the voting ballots back. I mean, until we, you know, I voted in Cobb, and it took me, like, all of maybe 10, 15 minutes to vote for president. And, of course, I'm voting Democrat, and, you know, but, hey, I mean, you know, I'm voting, like, say, one Democratic vote for every 15 Republican in that county.
Well, it may be. I mean, we don't know, because there's no paper trail on the machines in Cobb County
exactly.
or in the entire
exactly.
state of Georgia. That's why I'm convinced that Max Cleland actually won the election in 2002, because that election was the first election held in Georgia on the electronic touchscreen machines. The polls before the election showed that Cleland won by 5 points. The polls after the election show that Cleland won by 5 points. And the voting machines said that Cleland's opponent won by 5 points, and that Cleland lost by 5 points. And I am convinced to this day, call me a conspiracy nut if you want, I am totally convinced that election was hacked. And I don't think it takes some great big conspiracy to do it. It could have been one guy who's really good at what he does.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what, you know, we can call our senator and call our congressman and everything, but that, you know, in their own interest, they don't have any desire to change.
Well, here's what you do, James. You start writing letters to the Atlanta Constitution Journal at least once every couple of weeks saying, when are we going to get paper trails on these voting machines? When are we going to get voter verified ballots? When are we going to get voting machine software that's not owned by corporations but is open source and administered by the government so that we can see how our vote's being counted and we can keep track of it? When are we going to, you know, let's stop the corruption in Georgia. Start a campaign. Write letters to the editors of your TV stations and your news outlets. Call into your talk radio shows. Start making a lot of noise. Join up with the Democratic Party there and put that on their agenda. Say, hey, guys, we're not going to get anywhere if these guys own the machines. Let's do something about that. Join the Greens. Join the Progressives. Get active, and I think you'll have a venue for doing it. If my daughter can raise hell down in Cobb County, Georgia, and she did, I got to tell you this very quickly. She was 12 years old, 13 years old. She was in the middle school there, and Newt Gingrich was coming to town, and they wanted a good photo op. So they told all the kids, you can't talk to each other between classes because we got all these nice white bread kids, right? And so the kids started hugging each other. Well, 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds tend to hug people of the same sex, and Newt was anti-gay. So then they freaked out. They said, and then you can't hug each other. So our youngest daughter led a protest, a sit-in at the principal's office, and ended up getting thrown out of school. So we homeschooled her. That's how that story ended. It was a great thing for her. But welcome to Cobb County. But stand up, speak out, take the lesson of a 13-year-old and do it. And I know you can, James.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay, do it. Do it. Good on you. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
What is this? Some kind of a game? All the germs you sold to Saddam Hussein. But that was when he was our friend, and you're gonna bring them home to us. In the end.
Yeah, right. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Donkey Hoti in the chat room says, Tom, if you're looking, what about the proposition that the weather only provide emergency weather service so that private companies can sell weather info? There's another part of the Republican agenda here. Our tax dollars are paying for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the NOAA, and which provides daily weather information on the Internet for free. And they want to say, no, you can't do that anymore, NOAA. That's paid for with taxpayer dollars. You provide that information to the corporations will sell it and charge people for it. Welcome to the wonderful world of bushland. Brian in Portland on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Hi, Tom.
Hey, what's up?
Wait, I just want to discuss voting rights. Are you working out of Oregon now?
I am. I'm in Portland, same
excellent.
City you are.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Voting rights, as you know, are up to the individual states, and I take every opportunity I can to really promote the vote-by-mail system we have in Oregon.
Yes.
I think it has a ways to go. I think that there are still things we can fine-tune, but I think any time we're voting on a machine, whether there's a paper trail or not, there's always going to be opportunity for, problems, and I just really feel that vote-by-mail is an exceptional way to vote.
I agree with you, Brian, and in fact, on my local program on KPOJ, AM620, which is from 6 to 9 in the morning, Portland time, I had the Secretary of State on last week, and we discussed this, and I asked him the question, okay, the mail ballots come into your office, what do you do with them, and you know what they do with them?
Yeah, they file them away.
No, they feed them through a voting machine made by Sequoia.
Well, are you saying that they should never be fed or checked electronically?
Well, I'm suggesting that the electronic machines, the electronic voting machines, the tabulators that scan the vote-by-mail votes should be programmed with software that is open source, that should not be from a private corporation that claims, that tells the state of Oregon that it has no right to look at the software, it has no right to see how those votes are being counted. And so, I'm not saying that there's, fraud going on in Oregon, but in fact, I'm quite sure that there's not, relatively sure. But the potential for it exists even here in Oregon. because we have private corporations involved in the vote process. That's wrong. Thanks a lot, Tom Brian, for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends, the Tom Hartman radio program, where reason is our lifestyle choice, among other things. It's 7 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, TomHartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room and participate, hang out with some of the finest minds in all of the internet. Interesting news today. Actually, there's a pile of interesting news we'll be getting to as we go through the next 2 hours of the program. And greetings to our friends on radio stations from coast to coast, from California to North Carolina on Sirius Satellite Radio. RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Live365's American FM. For 27 years, Willie Fontenot has had a unique job in the office of the Louisiana Attorney General. We will get to that in just a moment. Tom in Minnesota has been patiently waiting on hold here for a while. I'll take that call. Tom, hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I have a report here from the front lines of how your listeners are getting active in battling the cons propaganda here.
Oh, good.
Yeah, this morning I called O'Reilly real quick. He was talking about voter apathy and how Americans are more interested in American Idol than serious issues like the invasion of our borders, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
And then as I told him the reason for this, he cut me off, and then he gave his typical insane answer. And basically I said, hey, the reason is that citizens are so busy and stressed out to keep up economically at work that they prefer entertainment and escapism, you know, to get a brief respite from their hectic lives. And I go, the solution for this is if American citizens had, you know, real democracy in the workplace, and I went on to say a place where citizens spend half their waking life, he cuts me off, right? And then he says the typical inane answer. He goes, oh, well, you're talking about government in the workplace, and the problem is overtaxation and regulation.
Can you believe it? Well, see, that's, you know, the good news is that you got a few words out.
Right.
The bad news is, unfortunately, it's really hard to beat a talk show host because, by and large, that's right, they have the button, or I have the button for that matter. But, you know, on this program, I generally let cons go on and on. I mean, yesterday I had a guy call in, and about the third time he was calling names, you know, he starts out with this name, and it's terrible. And then he goes, Jimmy Carter, worst president. No specifics, just wants to do name calling.
Right.
You know, there is a point where you cut people off because they're sounding stupid.
Right.
But if a conservative comes on this program or calls into this program and they want to debate me on the issues, I love it. In fact, I would, frankly, I would take those calls all day long. The conservatives call, they always go to the front of the row because I want to hear what they're thinking and I want to have an opportunity to talk to them about it.
Sometimes I wonder if I'm wasting my time. I feel like, you know, Alfred Hitchcock's movie, The Birds, where Tippi Hedren in the final scene in the attic where she's swatting all those birds, it's like it's hopeless.
It's not hopeless, Tom. It's really not hopeless. America is changing. Look at what Denny Hastert did today or yesterday, backing down on the thing with the House Ethics Committee.
People don't trust him.
Of course. But you know, they occasionally the sanitizing sunlight gets in there and they have to clean up.
You kind of hope that a few of these cons heard the word democracy in their workplace and thought, how does O'Reilly get from that to government involved in your life?
It's just, you know, that's his standard talking point. Tom, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you, and thanks for calling in. It is Thursday, the second hour of our program, time for our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment.
But you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
And welcome. It's the... I think I just dumped a caller. Mary Lee, are you there?
Yes, I am, Tom, and I'm
great.
So happy to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. I had Steve Chase on the line, too, and I clicked on him, and
ooh.
Boom, he went away.
Wow, but we need him. I hope you'll grab him back.
Well, Louise is dialing him as we speak. So
wonderful.
So you are with...
Louisiana Environmental Action Network, and I'm thrilled to be able to share with you what's going on in Louisiana.
And, in fact, there's this fascinating story. Does he pronounce his name Fontenot or Fontenot?
Fontenot, because, you know, lots of French folks down here.
There
so
you
Fontenot.
Go. That's what I kind of figured. But I also lived in Vermont where, you know, they threw the French out and then they went through and anglicized all the names. So I lived in Montpelier and the next town over was Calais. You know,
there
and like
you
that.
Go.
So, and it's funny. In fact, a Republican came into the state to try and run against Pat Leahy for the U.S. Senate, and he kept talking about Montpelier and Calais, and Vermonters are going, "What?
What's he talking about?"
Right. So I imagine if I went down to Louisiana and said Fontenot, everybody would go, "Ah, I know where this guy is not from. He's not from here."
I was gonna say he's not one of us down here, but that's okay. We appreciate you caring about. To us down here, and you have a very lively show. I love listening to a bit of it a few minutes ago. So,
well, thank you, Mary Lee. We also have Steve Chase on. He's the program director of the Environmental Advocacy and Organizing Program, Department of Environmental Studies at the Antioch New England Graduate School. Hey, Steve, welcome back
Tom.
To the program.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad you could make it. So, between the two of you, you can tell us this story. I have the story here in front of me, but rather than my plain reporter, we'll let this unspin for our listeners over the next 7-8 minutes here as we go through it. Who is Willie Fontenot, and why should we care?
Mary Lee, why don't you take that part, and then I'll tell the story about what happened
to him. Absolutely. Steve and I, I have great respect for him. And Willie Fontenot is one of the founders of LEAN, but he served as a community liaison officer for the Louisiana Attorney General here in Louisiana for 27 years. And the Attorney General hired him to help citizens solve their environmental problems, help folks learn how to organize, how to find technical and legal assistance.
That sounds like a noble thing. Was it a Democratic Attorney General 27 years ago?
It was. And
gee, what a surprise.
It is a noble thing. Exactly. And he has given great service to the state. In fact, the first AG who hired him is quoted in a book saying that he employed one of the most valuable, long-standing protectors of Louisiana citizens and the environment, Willie Fontenot. And he is a personal mentor of mine. Our organization is 19 years old, and he's just given countless hours and time to hundreds of groups throughout Louisiana and many other states. So
he's
one of our treasures, Tom.
Until he got in a little trouble.
Well,
that's maybe
I got in a little trouble. Yeah, this is where Steve can tell you the trouble part. Go,
okay, Steve Chase.
Well, at Antioch, we have a field studies program where students travel. We've gone to the Galapagos, the Sonoran Desert, to Alaska, Pacific Northwest. But my colleague, Abby Abresh-Walton, and I in the advocacy and organizing program, we're saying we need a field studies program that addresses urban concerns, that deals with industrial pollution, that deals with public health issues, environmental racism, and corporate power. Now, if you put all those things together,
you get Louisiana.
You're going to want to go and visit Cancer Alley in Louisiana,
right,
which is the stretch of the river between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, where there's over 150 petrochemical companies, and around them are communities, whereas only 30% of the population of Louisiana is African American. Around these plants, within like a 2-mile radius, it's well over 80% of African Americans who are directly and horrendously impacted.
And the cancer rate is through the ceiling there.
Well, and as on Mary Lee, her website, it talks about Louisiana yet again has the worst public health record of all 50 states in the nation.
Right. And that website, by the way, is, Mary Lee,
www.leanweb.org.
LEANWEB.org.
And it says we're the unhealthiest place to live again and again.
Amazing.
And one other.
So, Steve, just to move this along, one other important, you were going to say something.
Yeah, one other important statistic is Louisiana produces 25% of the U.S.-produced chemicals in the world, and it's the second poorest state in the country. So there's a lot going on here.
There's no coincidence there, Steve.
No, there's no coincidence at all. So we wanted to study this, so we contacted Willie, who has done lots of toxic tours for the Sierra Club, the Society of Environmental Journalists, lots of colleges and universities over the last 27 years.
So you're a college, and you've got students, and you want to send them on a tour, on an eco-tour of a toxic site.
That's right. We're spending spring break in Cancer Alley.
There you go. And so you contact Willie Fontenot, who is working with the Attorney General's office, and ask him if he can be a tour guide, basically.
Yep. And we brought him up here, and he gave a public talk, spoke with our students to get them ready for the trip. We went down. I sent a memo to the Attorney General saying this is what we want from Willie in his official capacity. Now, the first thing that happened.
Now we have a Republican Attorney General, right?
I don't think so.
No, he's a Democrat, actually.
He's a Democrat, okay.
I think what you would call a blue dog Democrat.
Okay.
I forget the journal, but it was some publication in Louisiana, described him as the darling of the petrochemical industry.
Yeah.
So we're down there, and we're taking pictures, and we're interviewing people, and we're talking to the mayor of Baton Rouge and local activists and people in impacted communities. We even visited a PVC plant, the Shintech Corporation, and so it's a pretty broad-based education, a two-week trip. We were, the first 2 days, we were intercepted and detained by corporate security guards for committing the crime, though it turns out it's not a crime, of taking pictures of industrial facilities, though we were told it was a violation of federal law both times. The second time, Willie was in the car with us. He was in the van. And so we were thinking, okay, we had a hard time. We were detained for an hour and lied to, and were even threatened the first time. The corporate security officer said, well, we're turning all your names over to the FBI. You can expect them to come to your house, and they often come in the middle of the night. And so the second time, we're outside the ExxonMobil plant in Baton Rouge, and it was part of a case study that we were working on that day. And so the students, we parked the van. The van was parked. Students get out, and about four or five of them take pictures of the neighborhood and take pictures of the facility. Now, if this is such a big security concern, I don't understand. In the ExxonMobil annual report, it has several pictures of this facility.
Of the same facility.
Available. So, and we were told again that it was illegal, and Willie explained that it's not illegal, and then they made up the story of, well,
Homeland Security!
Well, they said three of them trespassed, and Willie said, no, that didn't happen. And so, after about an hour, we were eventually let go. And Willie was hugely helpful, stayed calm.
Steve, I'm sorry, we only have a minute and a half left, and we need to wrap this story up, and we need to tell our listeners what they can do about this.
Okay, an ExxonMobil employee who is an off-duty cop who was working as a security guard complained to the AG. The AG, 2 weeks later, forced Willie to retire. He said, you can retire with benefits and be out of here by tomorrow, or you can have a hearing and likely be fired. Willie, 62, has some serious health problems. He reluctantly chose to retire. We're trying to change that. We're trying to get publicity. We're trying to get people to write to the AG. And if you want, I could give the email address.
Please do.
Wartell's that you want, Steve?
Yeah, it's the Wartell K, WARTELLEK at ag.state.la.us.
Okay.
And we're asking people to demand that the Attorney General Foti meet with Willie, offer him his job back, and make a public statement.
And clean it up. And I'm hoping, Mary Lee, that you have this email address at leanweb.org.
Yes, we will. Yes,
okay.
And Tom,
put it up on your website.
Thank you so much.
Because that's
okay.
A lot easier for people to remember. Thanks
yes.
so much, Steve and Mary Lee. Steve Chase with the Environmental Advocacy and Organizing Program. Mary Lee with the Louisiana Environmental Action Program. Do appreciate both of you being on today.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye.
bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Are we going to Graceland again?
She looked me over and I guess she thought I was all right. All right in a sort of a limited way for an off night.
Oh,
she said, don't I know you from the cinematographer's party? I said, who am I to blow against the wind?
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, if you'd like to drop into our live chat room, tomhartman.com will get you there, where you will find the finest minds and some of the most eclectic and eccentric on the entire internet, in the entire planet. 400 or 500 million people on the internet. And the very best ones come to tomhartman.com and click on live chat. Even the finest conservatives occasionally show up. It's been a while since we had one to kick around, but maybe that'll stir it up. Not sure that we'd necessarily want that. Okay, Justice Sunday, here we have Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist singling out Judge Priscilla Owen, one of the blocked appeals court nominees, one of the toxic seven, for praise in the telecast. A remarkable story, which we will get to right after we hear from Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria.
Hey. Yes, movement on all these things, on judges, on filibusters, on ethics rules. And tonight, of course, President Bush holding a primetime news conference, which I have to say I've been talking to a lot of radio stations around the country today, and many people are bringing up the question of, why is he doing it on Thursday night in prime time? The Apprentice is on, the CSI. He's messing everybody's schedule.
Well, are these stations going to interrupt this programming, or are they going to leave it to the cable stations, and therefore he won't get much coverage?
My understanding is that he has requested the networks to carry it, and so they probably will.
Wow.
And in fact, I mean, this was of such interest to the press corps that it came up in this morning's gaggle.
Uh-huh.
The question of preempting shows. So, yes, we do expect that this will be widely carried tonight, and it is only the third that he's done in this presidency. So it was quite a surprise. I was at the briefing yesterday. There was no indication at all that this was going to happen, even though they had to know. I don't suppose they suddenly thought at 4 o'clock in the afternoon they were going to
do
it.
No, they write these things a week in advance. They rehearse them like crazy. They focus group test them. Every single word in it, Frank Luntz, is run by 200 or 300 people. They make absolutely certain that they know what the impact of it is going to be before they do it. So what's he going to talk about tonight? Is it going to be Social Security?
It'll be
judges?
Social Security. No, probably not judges. He'll talk about Social Security and he'll talk about energy. Those are the two things. I mean, he apparently does feel, or at least the people around him feel, that his ratings are down, that they feel that it may be...
So this is a salvage operation.
It's a salvage operation. They will say that this first part of the Social Security campaign is just about to come to an end, the 60 days, and that the aim was to inform the public, and that they have achieved that, and that their aim was...
Oh, he's going to declare victory.
Oh, yeah.
Declare victory and go home. He's going to declare victory and hand it over to Grassley.
Basically, he is.
And Grassley's going to become radioactive.
Yeah. I mean, Grassley was indicating in the committee earlier this week that he was going to try and put some legislation together, even if he had to do it without the Democrats. And so, he will become radioactive.
That's the boy, is he going to become radioactive?
And then he'll talk about energy and about how the gas price problem took a long time. You know, it didn't happen overnight, and it can't be solved overnight.
Yeah. So, yeah, nice cliche. Let's go back to Jimmy Carter talking about this, saying this is what we have to do if we want to have energy independence in the United States.
Well, what we have to do is we have to take over those closed down bases and start building refineries, is what the president will say.
Yeah, yeah. So very quickly, Victoria, anything else happening in Washington, D.C. you want to share with us?
No, those are really the main things. There are a few hearings going on, but pretty much all Washington is focused on tonight.
Okay, thanks a lot. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, stick around for just a second. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. And the place where smart people get their news, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. In the real free speech zone.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Boogie on down. Okay, here we are. Priscilla Owen. Yesterday we were talking about Janis Brown, one of the Toxic Seven. The one who says that, well, you know, 1937, that was the height of the socialist revolution in America when we got this socialist program, Social Security, and that the Supreme Court ought to rule that it's unconstitutional. So that's Janis Rogers Brown. She's the one who is going to be portrayed by the Reich Wing as being persecuted because she is, A, person of faith, B, African-American. Although the real bottom line is, she is a conservative nutcase. She's over the edge. She thinks Social Security is socialism. You will recall there were members of the Supreme Court who thought that same thing back in the 1920s, when the first attempts to have a national pension plan were put into law, and the Supreme Court struck them down. The Supreme Court struck down the child labor laws. The Supreme Court struck down the minimum wage laws back in the 19-teens, all because it's socialism, don't you know? Well, that was Janis Rogers Brown. Now we have Priscilla Owen. Priscilla Owen is the one of the justices, one of the judges that the Bushies want to nominate to the Circuit Court of Appeals, one step away from the Supreme Court. Bill Frist, on Sunday, on his Justice Sunday gig, Bill Frist singled her out, said, "Isn't she wonderful? She's the one. She's this." Many people believe Frist's specific mention of Owen, notes the Center for American Progress, suggests she may become the contested nominee at the focus of the looming showdown. For all the conservative talk against judicial activism, Frist and other conservatives should know that Owen has a long record of extremist decisions. Her own hometown newspaper described her as, quote, all too willing to bend the law to fit her views rather than the reverse, end quote. In fact, in reference to one of Owen's dissents, then-colleague and fellow Texas Supreme Court Justice Alberto Gonzalez went so far as to describe the decision's proposed interpretation of the law as, quote, an unconscionable act of judicial activism, end quote. This from Alberto Gonzalez. Alberto Gonzalez, the president's lawyer who said that you can torture people, you can lock up American citizens without access to the courts. You can throw away the Constitution. You can shred the Bill of Rights. The guy who's now our... I can't even say it. Who's now our... who is now our Attorney General. Alberto Gonzalez calls Priscilla Owen guilty of an unconscionable act of judicial activism. The Houston Chronicle, not known as a liberal newspaper, a conservative newspaper, the Houston Chronicle, said that she was too conservative. Why? Because she too often contorts rulings to conform to her particular conservative outlook. The San Antonio Express said, and I quote, the Senate should not block a judicial nominee simply because he or she is more conservative or more liberal than the Senate's majority party, but concerns about Owen go to the heart of what makes a good judge. A good judge. There's been a good deal of coverage of Owen's anti-choice stance, but her pro-business leanings may be as disturbing, notes the Center for American Progress. This is the real agenda. I'm telling you, this is the real agenda. Frist and his buddies, they want to get the pro-corporate folks onto the courts, particularly the ones who are willing to blow up the Constitution and put us under control, no longer a nation of, by, and for we the people, but of, by, and for large multinational corporations, the extremely wealthy, inherited wealth. This is what it's all about, I'm telling you. In 2003, the Austin American Statesman declared that Owen, quote, could usually be counted on in any important case that pitted an individual or group of individuals against business interests to side with, guess who? The businesses. Furthermore, she had a questionably ethical tendency to take, quote, campaign contributions from law firms and corporations and then, without recusing herself, rule in their favor when their cases came before her, end quote. This from a newspaper in the state where she's on the Supreme Court. Owen's rulings are considered so business-friendly and tainted that when a member of the National Lawyers Association once quipped, In my more cynical moments, I suggest that just as sports stadiums are now named after corporations, judicial seats are soon to follow. In that vein, I believe that Justice Owen could well fill the ExxonMobil or Walmart seat on the Fifth Circuit. You will recall that Benito Mussolini, when he instituted what he called fascism in Italy, dissolved Italy's parliament in the late 20s and replaced it, or in the early 30s, I'm not sure the exact year, but right around that, right around plus or minus 2 years of 1930, dissolved the parliament and replaced it with the Cameo del Fascistio Corporaziones. Forgive my horrible Italian. The Chamber of Fascist Corporations. Communities no longer sent elected representatives to parliament in Italy. Instead, corporations were represented in parliament. Welcome to fascism, American style. The Enron and Halliburton cases. Two notable past corporate-friendly cases ruled on by Owen involve very publicly known corporations, Halliburton and Enron, both of which donated to Owen's judicial campaign. So she's getting money from Halliburton. She's getting money from Enron. And then a case comes before her about Halliburton that has to do with the oil industry. Sanchez versus Halliburton. A Halliburton field worker in a lower court had won a $2.6 million verdict after the jury found that a company supervisor had framed him to test positive for cocaine. Now, this guy's trying to get his good name back. An appeals court ruling overturned the verdict. Sanchez tried to bring the case to the Texas Supreme Court. In the months during which the case was before the court, Halliburton made its only campaign donations to Texas Supreme Court justices that year, giving thousands of dollars to three justices, Priscilla Owen, Nathan Hecht, and Alberto Gonzalez. The result? The court declined to hear the case, and the ruling overturning Sanchez's case stood. Here's another one, Enron Corp. versus Spring Independent School District. Owen authored the opinion for a unanimous court decision that saved Enron $225,000 and resulted in lost revenue for the school district. But it saved money for Enron, and Enron is her patron. Priscilla Owen had a reputation for slowness in handling her caseload. There were times she got so behind the clerk court's tell of other justices ordering opinions to be taken from her chambers. In the case of Willie Searcy, Owen stands accused of contributing to his death by her dalliance. After a defective seatbelt left the teenage Searcy paralyzed, a jury awarded his family millions of dollars in damages. Attorneys on both sides of the case asked for an expedited ruling, but the family especially needed the money because they didn't have any money to provide medical care to him. The case languished for years. When Owen finally got around to writing the opinion, she took issue with the question that was not even raised. She left the family with nothing and ordered a new trial. When the court issued its ruling, it included an odd addendum paragraph that apologized for Owen's delay. Searcy died. It wasn't Owen who apologized. It was the court that she kicked this thing to. Searcy died while awaiting the Owen-ordered new trial. The family attorney said, there's no question, absolutely no question, that the delay contributed to causing Willie's death. We could have saved his life if he'd had the funds to do it. All this talk over vacancy crises. Right now, the vacancy rate, the unemployment rate on the circuit courts of America is lower than the vacancy rate, the unemployment rate among workers in America. It's below 5.5%. Fully one-third of Bill Clinton's judicial nominees got stopped by the Republicans in the Senate. Fully a third of them. 95% of George Bush's judicial nominees have been approved by the Senate. What's wrong with this picture? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Joe in Brookings, Oregon, on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Yes, I was just wondering, why wouldn't it be possible for the Democrats in the Senate to put on a filibuster to save the filibuster rule?
Because you can't filibuster rules. Rules are passed by a majority of the senators. This is why it's so easy for Frist to blow up the nuclear option, to blow up the Senate. All they'd have to do is somebody says, okay, I'm going to invoke a filibuster, and then Frist can say, okay, we're going to call for a change in the Senate rules so that we don't have to do that filibuster, and he only needs 51 votes to do that. And
yeah,
the filibuster gets broken, and it's broken forever.
Well, so then we go on to the next point, and why is it that I see the senator from Illinois, Richard Durbin, saying that no, we the Democrats we're not going to hold up all business in the Senate. We're just not going to do that like the Republicans did with the with the whole battle they had with Clinton back in 1995.
Right.
Well, why the hell won't they?
Well, what their strategy is now is they're threatening to do what, in my opinion, they should have been doing for the last 6 years continuously. They're threatening to say, okay, in the Senate, we're going to talk about Social Security. We're going to talk about Medicare. We're going to talk about the fact that there are unemployed and homeless in America. We're going to talk about minimum wage. We're going to talk about the sorry state of the union movement in the United States as a result of 25 years of organized war against democracy in the workplace by the Reagans and the Bushes. And for that matter, Clinton helped. Clinton was not all that toxic on labor, but, well, he was. He signed NAFTA and GATT and the whole thing. And they said they're going to talk about these issues. Well, I'm saying start today, guys.
Well, they put in this filibuster. I mean, that is time for the big showdown to just say to hell with it. We're just going to shut the whole damn thing down.
Yeah, except that they don't have the 55 votes. They can't shut it down.
Well,
if the filibuster gets blown up, 55 members of the Senate are Republicans. There's only 100 senators. That's more than a majority.
Yeah, I know, but don't they need 60 to blow it up?
They need 60 for a filibuster. They only need 51 votes to do away with a filibuster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got one more thing to point out. Isn't it true that Bill Frist is too busy running for president because he's not going to run for re-election in 2006? This means you got a senator who wants to blow up the filibuster. He's a lame duck senator, and then you got a lame duck president who wants to ruin Social Security and get rid of it. I think that's something for the Republican Party to think of before they follow these idiots on their road to doom.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It is a true tragedy for us in the United States to have these guys playing politics with our nation, with our institutions. It is something that no politician has been so sleazy as to do in 230-some-odd years. And here now we have the sleaziest politicians, in my opinion, probably in the history of this country. They're right up there with the corruption in the U.S. Grant administration. And worse, frankly, than the Reagan administration, which holds the record for the number of felons convicted among high officials in government office. Joe, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. Thanks for listening to us in Oregon here. Phil in Tampa on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Phil, what's up?
Hi. You're talking about the courts. I wonder if you heard the latest. Here in Florida, the Florida Supreme Court failed to give Mr. Limbaugh what he wants. They failed to overturn a decision that said that he has to surrender his medical records to law enforcement. How about that?
Yeah. Well, he's got the ACLU on his side.
But, you know, there are people who are basically above the law when we really get down to it, and he's one of them.
Limbaugh.
Very wealthy.
Yeah, he's a multimillionaire, and he's got a big microphone, and he's a big friend to and help to the Republicans.
That's right. He's
yep.
above the law. You got plenty of people here in Florida. It doesn't take much to go to jail in Florida. I want you to know that. But you got a lot of people in Florida jails for doing a lot less than he did related to, you know, related to drug abuse.
Yeah, no, we really
cells.
Yeah, we really do have two Americas, Phil. Phil, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. In fact, that reminds me.
With condescending tribes making money selling lies.
Time for a limbo alert.
Hates my guts. I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic guts.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
I'm a Nazi.
Ah, yes, well, our quote for the day from Rush Limbaugh. This was several years ago that he said this. It was widely reported when he first was in trouble, shall we say, but nonetheless worth revisiting, quoting Limbaugh, and we have laws against selling drugs, pushing drugs, using drugs, importing drugs, and the laws are good because we know what happens to people in societies and neighborhoods which become consumed by them, and so if people are violating the law by doing drugs, they ought to be accused, they ought to be convicted, and they ought to be sent up. He added, when you strip it all away, Jerry Garcia, the former Grateful Dead guitarist, destroyed his life on drugs, and yet he's being honored like some godlike figure. Our priorities are out of whack, folks. Yes. Something to consider.
And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomiting. Because I'm a Nazi.
Our Rush alert for the day.
I'm a Nazi. You're being scammed. I'm a Nazi. I don't care about the middle class. Because I'm a fear-mongering scumbag.
Yes, well, we'll stop it right there. Welcome back. And Priscilla Owen, I want to get back into Priscilla Owen. There's still a couple of points here that need to be made about her. And ethics delay, as in Tom Delay, what's Tom Delay doing with that thing in his mouth? And did he inhale? We'll get to that right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for We the People.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If you've got something to say, why don't you say it?
Okay, Mel Martinez is a coward. How's that something to say? Mel Martinez, the Republican from Florida, who sucks up to the Cuban-American community aggressively, has built his career on it. Yes, he's anti-Castro, pro-freedom. Well, not quite. Meet Carlos Lazo. Lazo arrived from Cuba on a wooden raft in 1992, as he writes in the Los Angeles Times, to taste freedom. His family, whom he continued to visit and support financially, remained in Cuba. This report from the Center for American Progress. Moving to Seattle, Lazo joined the National Guard. After that state was hit by an earthquake in 2003, he was deployed to Iraq. There he served as a medic thrust into the bloody assault on Fallujah. In June of 2004, on his first R&R, he flew to Miami in the hopes of visiting his now teenaged sons, who just happened to live in Cuba. The White House, however, had recently announced its politically motivated intention to crack down on travel to Cuba. We can't have that! That's money going to Castro! Any money spent with Cuba, that's money that Castro gets on his bloody hands! In fact, to quote Tom Delay, any money spent in Cuba, Castro will take the money. Every dime that finds its way into Cuba first finds its way into Fidel Castro's bloodthirsty hands. American consumers will get their fine cigars, their cheap sugar, but at the cost of our national honor. End quote from Tom Delay. We'll come back to that in a moment. So Carlos Lazo tries to go to Cuba to visit his family. He was banned. He couldn't do it. He says, the administration trusted me in battle in Iraq, but it does not trust me to visit my own children in Cuba. So he goes to Washington, D.C. and wants to meet with his senator, Senator Mel Martinez. Martinez passes him off to a staffer, and the staffer, who is supposed to have the meeting with him, then cancels the meeting. Tough luck, buddy. At the same time, we have a photo now in Time Magazine of Tom DeLay smoking a Cuban cigar, giving money to Castro, a $25 Cuban cigar. Tom DeLay giving money to Fidel Castro. Incredible. Hypocrite alert. Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. Well, my friends, on we go. Here we're being progressive. Never felt so good. Where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365 on American FM. 7 minutes past the hour. One day in the fall of 2004, writes David Case, Mike Simon was interrupted by a phone call that he still remembers well. The caller was a pollster asking about broadband. And then the pollster says, this is sort of like the questions that were being asked when John McCain was running against George W. Bush down in either South or North Carolina. And they were doing push polls, and they were calling up saying, if you knew that John McCain had been treated for mental illness because of his having been a prisoner of war, would you still vote for him? Or if you knew that John McCain had an African-American child out of wedlock, would you still vote for him? Really, nobody was interested in the outcome. It was a way of delivering a message to people in the appearance of a poll. It's called a push poll. And this question, should tax money be allowed to provide pornographic movies for residents? What's going on with this? Why are push polls being done in Chicago suburbs, an area called the Tri-Cities? Why? Or an exurb, a Chicago exurb, you know, area just outside Chicago. Well, we thought we would get on the author of the piece to talk about that. David Case is with us. David Case wrote this article for Mother Jones. You can find it on motherjones.com or if you pick up the magazine in any newsstand, the May-June 2005 issue. It's called Gigafight. Who wouldn't want cheap public internet access? Comcast, for one, is the subhead. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
That's great to have you here. Tell us about this story.
Well, this is a story about a small exurb outside of Chicago that was surviving only on dial-up internet access. This is a community that has a lot of high-tech businesses. They actually, the Fermi National Lab, the Defense Department's lab, is outside of town. So there are a lot of people there who are tech-savvy, depend on technology to make their living.
So this isn't a matter of, you know, hey, my teenage son can't play games on the web the way that he wants to, and he needs broadband for it. This has to do with generating commerce, maintaining the economy of a local community, and providing people with access to the web in a way that's, you know, actually useful. They can get their news, they can get information.
Absolutely. The opposition tried to make it into an issue of, can Johnny download his music fast enough? But in fact, this was an important economic issue for the community.
Uh-huh.
And basically, things came to a head. The mayor's office was getting calls every single day from people who were irate at the fact that they couldn't get their business done. There were small businesses in the community that were paying as much for rent as they were for a T1 line that they had specially wired in so that they could get access to the internet.
T1 lines, for those who don't know, unless I'm misinformed, a T1 line is the same kind of trunk line that, isn't it the same as the line that would bring 256 phone lines into an office?
Something like that, yeah. It has the speed of a cable
cable.
Right. It's got incredible bandwidth, but it's a telephone type line, and it's the kind that they, for PBX systems, it's the kind that would deliver a phone for example, to a hospital or something like that.
Right. And it's the kind that you have installed if you don't have broadband access, if your community doesn't offer it.
Right. So you were saying this simply wasn't available in this community, and so the citizens got together and said, we should do something about this since the corporations are. First of all, doesn't this represent a marvelous business opportunity? Why doesn't some entrepreneur start an internet company?
Well, absolutely. There were two providers in the area that not far from the Tri-Cities that provided broadband internet access, to SBC and Comcast, the local Baby Bell and the local cable TV provider.
Right.
And the first thing that the city officials did is they went directly to those companies and said, look, we have a problem here and we need to do something about this. Can you deliver us broadband internet access? And the companies essentially said no. They said that, you're too far from Chicago, the market's too small. We have other priorities.
This is the same issue the United States faced in the 1930s when the people in rural areas didn't have electricity, and Roosevelt said, okay, we're going to create the Rural Electrification Administration and bring electricity out to rural communities at taxpayer expense to make it happen, and then was done again in the 1950s with telephone lines.
Absolutely. In fact, this community had the same problem with electricity long before the 30s, and they decided to build their own utility. So they have their own private utility that serves, their own public utility, I should say, that serves just the 75,000 residents of the community.
Right.
And it's quite popular. They do quite a good job with it. So the residents of the community were pretty much in favor of the idea of developing a broadband internet system.
So if it works for electricity, why not do it for internet access? Let's just create our own utility.
Absolutely. And a lot of the infrastructure was actually in place already. The utilities are now laying out a lot of fiber optic cable, which is what the information on broadband systems goes across. And they lay out this fiber optic network to service the electricity utility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So step two, what happened next?
Step two, after the company said no, the community went ahead and started exploring the idea of building a system. And once the companies got wind of this, as the mayor told me, fear and trepidation were delivered en masse. According to Illinois state law, they had to pass a referendum in order for the communities to deliver internet access. And once the communities started talking about the referendum, the companies delivered fear and trepidation en masse. They came out with a massive, massive sort of guerrilla PR effort to convince the citizens of the community that this would be the worst thing for...
Porno is coming to your home! Right?
Porno is coming to your home, and it's going to cost you a lot of money, and we're going to have to cut the school budget to do it. Taxes are going to go up, on and on and on.
Yeah. And how did the people of the Tri-Cities area respond to this?
Well, it was actually, there were two referenda in the end. There was one in 2003, and there was one in 2004. And the PR, in the end, the PR effort won. The opponents of, well, the proponents of the broadband system had a budget for the second referendum of only $4,300. And that time around, the company declared, at least, that they spent over $300,000.
Wow.
And that $300,000 didn't include things like the nightly television ads that Comcast broadcast against the broadband proposal.
So if you have enough money, you can convince people that up is down, left is right, black is white, the sky is pink, whatever.
Absolutely.
And they did.
Especially if you own the airwaves as well.
Yeah. And so where is the Tri-Cities area at now?
Well, the referenda were defeated narrowly, between 3% and 10%. With the margin of defeat, and now they don't have a... Well, the good thing that happened, though, in the end, was that the companies got religion. They realized that they had a problem on their hands, that if they didn't do something about this market, they were going to lose it, and they rolled out broadband internet access fairly quickly.
So they brought service into the community at a reasonable price?
Well, yeah, at a reasonable price, a similar price to what people pay in other parts of the state, at least.
Right.
In,
although had the local community done it for themselves, it could have been dramatically less expensive.
Yeah, they had a very ambitious plan as well. They had, right now, most people download at a speed of about 1 megabit per second. And the communities wanted to build a system that would deliver not only internet, but also telephone service and cable TV service.
Which requires a width.
Yeah.
TV signal is 5.2 megabits.
To do broadband fiber optic, yeah.
that's extraordinary.
And they thought they could do it for prices that were more or less the same as the companies were offering.
So this
for wireless broadband access.
These have talked about. Let's put a point. What do you call it? It's not called a hot point.
Node.
Yeah, a node, an access point or something, into the community. Let's put a series of them around the public parks and all this sort of thing. So anybody with a PC can log onto the internet just by flipping it open if it's wire, you know, it's the Wi-Fi or wireless ready, and log on onto the web, and we'll just make it a public utility. It's like the streetlights. It's just something that, you know, we all pay for with our taxes, but so many of us use that it's a worthwhile investment. And these kinds of initiatives, these kinds of community initiatives, have met with some fierce opposition, David Case.
Yes, they have. Actually, Philadelphia has a very ambitious plan right now. By the summer of 2006, they're planning to convert the entire city into a wireless node. So you can do exactly what you're explaining, that you can open up your laptop and access the internet from anywhere. And that met with some serious resistance from Verizon, which is the local Baby Bell in Pennsylvania.
Right. It's still unresolved?
No, it's been resolved, actually. Philadelphia had enough political power behind it to get an exception to a law that was passed in Pennsylvania in late 2004. The law says that essentially you have to ask Verizon, if you're a community and you want to do what the Tri-Cities was trying to do, you have to ask Verizon permission. You have to give Verizon the right of first refusal.
We the people have to first ask the permission of the corporations, that in order to create a corporation, you have to go to the Secretary of State's office to We the People and ask for corporate papers?
Yeah, actually, I was reading on the freepress.net is the best place to go to read about this issue if you're interested in learning more. But I was reading there yesterday, one journalist compared it to asking Borders Books permission if you could take a book out of the local library.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy. We're talking with David Case. He's the author of an article called Gigafight in motherjones.com. And David, we've got about a minute left. Do you see censorship of the web coming down the road? There's a lot of people very concerned about this.
Well, that's one
corporate
of the concerns.
Control.
If the corporations, if it comes down to, the fear is that it's going to come down to a couple large companies in each market controlling the internet, and if it comes down to that, then who knows what's going to happen.
Well, I know routers, you know, the switching devices that notice which website you're looking at are already programmable. This was a big story 6-7 years ago when it was first revealed that some of them were actually being programmed, are programmable so that if you hit websites that the particular local utility or web, you know, ISP, internet service provider, doesn't want you to hit, they can actually slow down that website for you. There were allegations that one of the big ISPs that will go unnamed but owns news firms and whatnot was doing just that with their dial-up customers years ago. So another way that they could get around this, that they could do this to us. Remarkable. David Case, Gigafight, motherjones.com. David, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Tom.
I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. We're tuning in as easy as getting a White House press pass if you're a gay hooker.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Robin Bush and his merry band ripped apart this happy land. It's Robin Hood with a switch. He steals from the poor and gives to the rich. The Bushies and the Foxies and the prehistoric Limbaugh.
We had a huge surplus and it's gone. We'll be running huge deficits from now on. There are big tax refunds for a few. The rich get richer and the poor get screwed.
Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, where we run rings around the right wing every day. American students traveling abroad confirm the findings of a study indicating that Washington's unilateral approach to foreign policy has seriously undermined Americans' chances of getting laid. This from The Onion. I've been in Amsterdam for 2 months and have yet to begin a conversation with a cute girl that hasn't ended in a lecture about how big, evil America is taking everyone's oil, said college sophomore Brad Higgs, a participant in Johns Hopkins University study abroad program. He says, I offer to buy him a drink, and they tell me I shouldn't just stand by and watch Bush destroy the world. The report, released Monday by the Center for U.S. International Casual Relations, was based on interviews with approximately 1,400 American students returning from abroad, no pun intended. Instead of being inundated with questions about Hollywood and requests to help hot young foreigners practice their English, Americans are being openly scorned in European pubs and cafes. This from the study. Data taken from a poll of students in December 2004 showed that only a dismal 11% had achieved, shall we say, Congress with a non-American. Higgs said, last week I was making out with this Italian girl at a concert. It was all going great until the music ended and she heard my American accent. Then she said, why won't your country sign the Kyoto Treaty? University of Colorado junior Casey Knight, who is has just arrived in Amsterdam after a month of Germany, he says, I asked a group of German girls at some Eurotrash disco to dance, and they started yelling at me. They said that by paying taxes to the American government, I am no better than a fascist. This affects all of us, Higgs said. These are our students, our overseas students. They're appealing for help. This affects all of us, Higgs said. The government has to acknowledge the needs of young Americans. Too many U.S. citizens in foreign lands are spending sleepless, lonely nights. Well, it's going to take a change in administration for our exchange students to again have a good time in a foreign country. Max and Susan's Tyler are still waiting to hear from the Secret Service. Yes, I know. The Onion is a faux news site. It's funny, right? Anyhow, Max and Susan, but this is serious. Max and Susan Tyler haven't heard from the Secret Service. They should. Writes Jim Spencer in the Denver Post. The Secret Service is reportedly investigating whether a Republican staff member illegally impersonated a federal agent when he removed Alex Young, Leslie Wise, and Karen Bauer before President Bush's March 21st Social Security Forum in Denver. They never did anything wrong. They didn't intend to disrupt the meeting. This guy never identified himself, although he had an earpiece. He had the lapel pin. He acted like an agent. Susan Tyler says, he had a white curly wire coming out of the back of his ear. He acted like he was sort of running the deal, at least the logistics. He announced that the Social Security meeting, George Bush's town hall meeting, was a, quote, private event, end quote, where people could be asked to leave, quote, for any reason, end quote, or, quote, arrested for trespassing, end quote. The Denver couple figured the man had the authority to put them in jail. Well, now, the chairman of the Young Colorado Republicans turns out to have been one of the people involved in this incident. A guy by the name of J. Bob Klinkerman. J. Bob Klinkerman. He was not the phony Secret Service agent, but he was working with him, Colorado Young Republicans. He came up to this group and he said, the Secret Service is coming down to talk to your group. And then the Republican staffer, or whatever he is, we still don't know, shows up and throws them out. Klinkerman, 31, declined to identify the man who threatened the trio with arrest. The real Secret Service says they're looking into it. The Secret Service and White House know the man's name but have refused to reveal it. Does this sound familiar? 29 minutes past the hour.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, Bill Gates is at it, speaking of Richard Corey.
They say that Richard Corey owns one half of this whole town with political connections to spread his wealth around. Born into society, a banker's only child, he had everything a man could want, power, great desire.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Or 11:33, 12:33, 1:33, or 2:33, depending on what time zone you may be in here in the United States. Bill Gates shows up on Capitol Hill yesterday to do a little song and dance. Lots of interesting Microsoft news today. The company that folks seem to love to hate. Bill Gates, chairman, Microsoft chairman Bill Gates, urged, this from the Associated Press, urged the Bush administration and lawmakers Wednesday to abolish immigration limits on foreign engineers who can be hired by U.S. companies. Now, at the same time that Bill Gates is down in Washington, D.C. saying, let's do away with the H-1B visa cap, which says that only 65,000 of these folks can be brought into the United States in a given year. And he's saying, let's do away with the cap so that he can hire as many engineers from India as he wants, who are ecstatic to come over to the United States, and particularly if the company will provide them with housing, work for $10,000 or $20,000 a year, because they can send that money back to India, and after 3 or 4 years go home, and, you know, they can support an entire family on that. $10,000 is big money in India a year. This is the beginning of the end. Well, it's not the beginning of the end. It's the middle of the end of computer engineering jobs being good white-collar jobs in the United States. Bill Gates saying, do away with the visas. And then at the same time, out of the other side of his mouth, saying, oh, and by the way, let's have our schools turn out more engineers. Well, let me ask you, if you're a student in an engineering school, you're a student in a university that has an engineering school in it, and you're trying to decide what to major in, and you know that if you go into computer engineering, software development, whatever, some aspect of computer engineering, you're going to have to compete with people from India who are willing to work here in the United States for $25,000 or $30,000 a year enthusiastically and do a good job because they're only here for a year or two, and that's big bucks for them. If that's what you're facing, and you're seeing that those jobs that back in the 90s were paying $100,000, $110,000, $120,000 a year, you know, for the really good ones in 70,000, 80,000, 60,000, 70,000. I mean, that was the range, basically, for somebody with a degree, a master's degree in computer engineering. And you're seeing now that a master's degree in computer science will get you, what, $35,000 a year, $40,000 a year? You going to spend 6 years doing that? I don't think so. And then Gates will be able to say, see, I can't find any computer engineers. It's setting up a self-fulfilling prophecy. But right now, the reality is that the unemployment rate in general in the United States is 5.5%, the official unemployment rate. The official unemployment rate for computer scientists is 5.7%. There are more unemployed computer scientists than there are average unemployed people. And yet Bill Gates is saying, do away with the H-1B visa cap. Yeah. What's wrong with this picture? Why might he be saying this? Could he be part of the great Republican conspiracy to destroy America's middle class and replace it with oligarchy and inherited wealth? Well, another advocate of just that, Ralph Reed, turns out to be getting $20,000 a month from Microsoft and has been, according to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, for several years been on the payroll of Microsoft. Now, what would they want with Ralph Reed, the Christian Coalition guy, the former buddy of Pat Robertson? What is worth $20,000 a month? A month! To Bill Gates in Ralph Reed. According to Microsoft spokesman Mark Murray, the company has hired Reed on several occasions to provide advice on trade and competition issues. Yeah, this guy's an expert on trading competition, Ralph Reed. And yet, Microsoft just decided not to back the bill in the Senate in the state of Washington that would have banned discrimination against people based on sexual orientation. A bill that went down to defeat by one vote. Went down to defeat because Microsoft backed away. A lot of people at Microsoft a little steamed about this right now. As George Chung, executive director of Equal Rights Washington, said of Microsoft, their reputation as a fair-minded company is rapidly slipping away from them, and if Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer are really interested in running a fair-minded company, they would fire Ralph Reed today. Well, let me tell you, George, while I salute you and your work, you got to understand, their reputation of being a fair-minded company lasts as long as it's profitable. And when it's no longer profitable, it's gone, because their interest is making money. And there was a time when you could make more money if you were perceived as being a nice guy, if you were perceived as being a socially conscious citizen, if you were perceived as being a responsible corporation. You could make more money. People liked you. They would buy your products. If people were concerned about your monopolistic enterprises, you give money to charity and you support gay rights and things like that. And those same people who would be concerned about monopolies go, well, they're not so bad. Until you're big enough and strong enough that you don't have to pay attention to those people anymore, because Linux is not really going to be a threat to you and you own a piece of Apple. You can pay the antitrust fine to the European Union out of chump change. And then you turn to your Republican buddies and say, okay, we'd like to start behaving like ExxonMobil. We would like to start behaving like profit is what it's all about, because that's really what it's all about. And if the consumer doesn't like it or the consumer gets hurt, well, tough luck. Microsoft reported spending $5.4 million on lobbying in the first 6 months of the year 2004. They paid Grover Norquist, the guy who said, I'm not opposed to American government. I would just like to take the government and shrink it down to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. They paid him $60,000. One of the biggest lobbying firms in Washington, D.C., in fact, was co-founded by Gates, or funded. I believe it's called Preston Gates. I may be wrong. Organizations and companies know that the Republicans are watching, says Steve Weiss, a spokesman for the Center for Responsive Politics. And then there's the K Street Project. This the program where the Republicans are saying to the lobbyists, who all seem to be concentrated on K Street in Washington, D.C., they're saying, if you have any desire at all to lobby Republicans, you may not hire Democrats. I'm telling you, this is Stalinism. This is moving us toward a single-party state. That is their mission, a single-party state. Never before in American politics have we seen anything this blatant, this clear, this unambiguous, this open, and this destructive to democracy. Ralph Reed, by the way, running for lieutenant governor in the state of Georgia, where they have the phony voting machines, so anything is possible. In fact, I would predict, as long as they have phony voting machines, corporate-owned voting machines, Ralph Reed will probably win. Because, well, you know, he's on the payroll of companies like Microsoft, Verizon, Enron, Ralph Reed's clients. I've been telling you, it's not about Christianity. It's not about abortion. It's not about anti-homosexuality. These are the issues they use to get the average guy, the average beer-drinking good old boy who works, you know, the average blue-collar worker in America, to get them on board. But it's really about money and power. That's what the filibuster's all about. That's what these so-called social issues, these so-called moral values are all about. I'm sorry, it is not moral to leave the poor on the outside looking in. It is not moral to create an economy that has increasing inequality. It is not moral to pass laws that make it harder for people to start small businesses and harder for people to have democracy in the workplace by being able to join a union. That is not moral. That is immoral. It is not moral to lie to your people about war. That is immoral. It is not moral to send your kids off to die so that you can get reelected. That is immoral. It is not moral to bomb another country that has not threatened you or harmed you and kill 100,000 of their civilians. That is immoral. And now, the logical outcome of this, this conflation of so-called morality and corporate power, giving more power to the Republicans, and thus the Republicans sucking up to and pandering to the paranoid. Republican Alabama lawmaker Gerald Allen has proposed a bill, this is from CBSNews.com, has proposed a bill under which public school libraries could no longer buy new copies of books or plays by gay authors or about gay characters. No more. No more Truman Capote. No more Gore Vidal. No more Tennessee Williams. No more Alice Walker's novel, The Color Purple, which has lesbian characters in it. No more Shakespeare. Librarian Donna Schremser fears the thought police will be patrolling her shelves. Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center says this is a Nazi book burning. But in book after book, Allen reads what he calls the homosexual agenda, and he's alarmed. Yeah, just like the segregationists were alarmed about Uncle Tom's Cabin in 1857. It's the abolitionist agenda. How dare they? We can't have this. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom. And if you travel just a little bit south of Alabama, well, you can go down to Florida, and if you're afraid somebody's going to cause you harm, well, you can just shoot them.
There you go. You can shoot based on fear alone. Fear-based. It's a complement to faith-based activity. It's fear-based activity. Those are the two things that this administration's all about.
The fellow that you quoted that it's Nazi book burning, it's not Nazi book burning, because at least the Nazis had the books to burn.
Yeah, yeah. He's saying don't bring the books in the first place.
Don't bring them in. We can't make a pile to burn them.
There you go.
Anyway, I wanted to kind of lift up a little bit. We had a couple hundred people down in front of the federal courthouse in Albuquerque yesterday.
That's great.
Protesting the, or not protesting, but just stating, keep the rules the same.
The filibuster.
With me and Crimebuster. Yes. Yeah,
the Senate, yeah.
The filibuster. And we had massive horn honking support. And
just from average people driving by.
In fact, we had one big old semi driver, and he was a delight. And he just about every 2 seconds hit the air horn all the time. He was a delight.
That's great.
We did a couple Texas strategies. When the news cameras were there, we all bunched on one side of the street, so we looked like this is the old banker's trick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When the banker'd come out to check the cows out, you'd put them all in one pasture.
Right.
Then when he came out to count them, you just ran them around the hill.
Right.
So what we did was we bunched together while the TV cameras were there. Anytime the cameras weren't there, we circled the block, or, you know, north side, across the street, across the south side, back up to the north side, and we just had kind of a parade going, so it looked like there was a whole lot more.
Look at, they keep on coming. They keep on coming. There's more of them. Hey, there's more of them.
No, we had fun. There's some discussion. We're going to see if we get through this weekend. We might do it again next week. Only my suggestion next week is that we do it on the sidewalk in front of Domenici's office, because at least Bingaman's going to support it.
Yeah.
But, and I keep thinking,
Domenici's a Republican, is he not?
He is, and he's been in the Senate since 1972.
So he's been around enough to see the changes.
He has the history, and he used to be so morally ethical.
Yeah.
That he was radically in the middle.
Well, he's probably terrified. He's probably terrified.
He was supporting the energy. He's on the energy committee. But there, we got a lot of energy here in New Mexico. But he wanted things to happen correctly and responsibly. When he was the chairman of the budget committee, he was striving for a budget balanced budget. He was on board for the amendment, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
And I can't help but think, unless he's had a stroke or something, how he's tolerating.
Well, what he's had is an attack of fear. It's what's happening all over there. They're looking at
the
what these guys.
The man is 78 years old, for crying out.
I know, but still, he wants to have some legacy. He doesn't want to be smeared. They're looking at what happened to Joe Wilson. They're listening to George Bush saying,
I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
What they're discovering is that these guys can commit high crimes and misdemeanors. They can commit treason, and there's no punishment for it. And so, if you stand up to them, you're toast. You're toast. Your career is toast. Your legacy is toast.
Well,
they're frightened.
I did find out SOB does work. I got right into Domenici's office.
There you go.
And I just hammered, I hope you have, the senator has the integrity. And that has been the theme every time I call it. I hope he has the integrity and the morality and the courage to stand up for what's right.
Well said, Roy. Well said.
Thank
you so much for calling. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Especially not tonight, 5:30 Eastern Time, I believe it is. Or maybe it's Pacific Time, I'm not sure. Anyhow, tonight, George W. is going to be out trying to polish his star. And I guarantee you he will be trying to mislead America. Not lead us, but mislead us, our misleader in chief. We will share with you tomorrow the details of that effort. Should be pretty conspicuous. Andy Borowitz reports, this is what it's come to, the result of 25 years of Reaganomics, Bushonomics, 25 years of this insanity. And this is what it comes to from BorowitzReport.com. Identity thief returns identities deemed worthless. An identity thief who had stolen over 500,000 identities over the past 2 years returned all but four of them today, declaring the identities totally worthless and an enormous waste of my time and hard work. The computer hacker who spoke to reporters via conference call today said that in all my years of stealing identities, I've never come across a bigger collection of losers. He said that he had spent months hacking through a security firewall of one of the nation's largest financial institutions, hoping to reap billions of dollars for his efforts. But after sifting through the stolen identities, he found that they were, quote, a little more than a garbage dump of unpaid college loans and overdue Blockbuster bills. Everyone's running around worried about identity theft these days, he added. All I can say is don't flatter about yourself by thinking you have an identity that's worth my time. In San Diego, at the annual convention of the National Association of Hackers and Identity Thieves, some of the nation's most prominent cyber thieves complained about what they called a serious decline in the number of identities worth stealing. They called out for financial institutions to institute measures that would warn or tag particularly worthless identities, enabling hackers to focus their energies elsewhere. Okay, Andy Borowitz, tongue-in-cheek, he really gets right to it. And then here in the New York Post, of course, you've got Deborah Orrin talking about how the Iraqi election turned out to be a triumph of democracy. Yes, tell that to the young men and women who are still dying there today. She writes, a second-term slump has now hit President Bush hard enough that some Republicans wonder aloud when he'll finally fight back. Democrats are picking on him for Bolton, for Social Security, gas prices, Tom DeLay, filibusters. Tonight he's going to fight back. Oh, the cons are all excited. Georgie is going to fight back tonight. He's going to do it like he did at Amherst when he was a cheerleader, when he led the cheerleading squad in high school, or in prep school, they call it. Excuse me. My public education, public school education leaking through there. Maybe the strategic confusion explains why Bush seems off his game, she writes in the New York Post. This is a Murdoch rag, you know. She says, Mideast policy scored a triumph when Syria pulled its troops out of Lebanon, but he barely noted it. Well, he'll crow about it tonight. But did it have anything to do with his Mideast policy? Many think not. Stephen Hess thinks Bush blundered by making Social Security reform the top priority. I'd say making Social Security theft, destruction of Social Security the top priority. That was a blunder, a big blunder. Hey, my friends, thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Louise for producing the program. To RadioPower.org, Shelby and Ben over at White Rose Society, and everybody who's the folks at American FM for streaming the program, our radio stations for carrying it, our affiliates. Thanks a lot. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Oh, and the folks in our chat room, too.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.